The voice of maybe a Tosefis Indian. So I took it off just a minor detail that I was going to add before we started at Parshas Shavuah. An interesting Indian that I was just in the bar a little bit with Dan Vinstock. There's an interesting Shiloh when it comes to Tosefis Shabbos on Asar B'Tevis. We just had a Messias of Tzom being on a Friday. We know that Allah is not fasting on Shabbos. So in England, it's really not an issue. Shabbos is Friday is short, and it's not a big deal, but in the southern hemisphere, in South Africa, in Australia, where Shabbos, it's summer now, and Shabbos comes in very late. So to have a tinus until 9:30 in the evening is a big deal. And people are bringing Shabbos in early, like we do here in the summer. Plag is already 7:30. So the Shiloh brought down in the Rishonim, actually, a very interesting discussion. I'm not going to Paskin and get into the Indian now, but it's an interesting discussion. If you're Mosif ala Kodesh, if you bring in Shabbos early, if you're allowed to break your fast, because it's Shabbos, even though it's Friday technically, after plug. So the issue, if you bring Shabbos in early, and then the Rishonim discuss this issue for a different time. Anyway, okay, Parshas Shavua, Parshas Peshalah, Shabbos Shira. I'm not going to sing, but a lot of very special inyanim come up in this week's parsha, and I want to focus on a beautiful pasuk. Every pasuk is beautiful, but I want to focus on one pasuk with a Rashi and really mivavar Rashi a little bit in the two inyanim that he discusses. The pasuk in the beginning of the parsha says, "Vayasev Elokim esam derech hamidbar yamsuf v'chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael mi'aretz Mitzrayim." Pasuk says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took the b'nei Yisrael around towards the yamsuf v'chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael mi'aretz Mitzrayim. And the word chamushim needs touch. It's not a very common word. It doesn't really fit into the text as normally does. And the Mefarshim really discuss this wording, what exactly means. What does it mean, v'chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael mi'aretz Mitzrayim? In what way did they go up from Mitzrayim? So Rashi already helps us. Rashi brings two definitions. Interesting, Ha'ara on Rashi is his exact language. Rashi says v'chamushim. Rashi says, ein chamushim ala muzuyonim. Now Rashi says the chamushim must mean, there's no other way to translate it, other than that they were armed. And Rashi continues and he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw the future, he knew they'd be attacked by Amalek, he was Roas and Nolad, and he knew the Klal Yisrael was going to be in the Midbar without the proper protection from their enemies, and Amalek was going to come and attack us, and B'Shalach in this week's Parsha, and we would have what to fight with. And Rashi actually alludes to the Mefarshim that explain that the detractors or the critics often ask, how did Klal Yisrael, they were Shibun Mitzrayim, they were there for so many years, how did they fight back Amalek? So Kadosh Baruch Hu is telling us he planned it from the beginning, he sent them out armed. And Rashi gives a couple of examples throughout Tanakh where this word chamushim could mean some semblance of an explanation to mean, a hint at least, that it means that they were armed. That's the first pshat in Rashi. The second pshat in Rashi, davar acher, and I just want to make a ha'ara, I don't want to discuss it at length, but Rashi says in the beginning of Rashi, the lashon of Rashi is ein chamushim ala muzyanim. He says there's no other translation other than this, and then at the end of Rashi says davar acher, which is an interesting point. The Rashi seems to say there's no choice but to say, and then he says another way. But davar acher, he says another word, chamushim, what does it mean, chamushim? How did they go out from Mitzrayim? Chamushim means mei chamushim, it means echad mechamesh. It doesn't mean chamushim just straight. It means a ki'ilu of five. And Rashi says, echad mechamisha yatsu, one in five from B'nai Yisrael. Yatsu, they went out. V'dalad chalakim, and four parts of Klal Yisrael, mesu b'shloshes semei afela. Four parts of Klal Yisrael actually was nifter, passed away during Makas Choshech, during the darkness of Makas Choshech. Yeah. So two translations, two wording explanations that Rashi gives. One, chamushim means they were armed. The second is the echad mechamesh. One in five of Klal Yisrael actually left Mitzrayim, where the four-fifths were in Zelcha and didn't leave. Okay, so let's look at both ideas and try to understand them a little bit deeper. The first idea, Rashi says that it means that they were armed. And it's necessary to say that they were armed, because how could it be that Hashem wouldn't provide for us? We needed to fight back our enemies. But if you look at the Mitzias of Klal Yisrael throughout the Golos, yeah, and then as the Geula comes, there's lots of things that they didn't have. Yeah, it wasn't just arms that they needed. It wasn't just weaponry to Vamachama. We needed food, so we had a little bit of matzah, but it didn't last very long. Klal Yisrael is in the Midbar, and Baruch Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides a nes, and they have man. Man falls from Shemayim, and Baruch Hashem, Klal Yisrael is fed. They need a little bit of meat, so the slav falls, also in this week's parasha. Yeah, and then the Klal Yisrael needs clothing, the Medrash talks about the fact that the clothing grew with them. right? All of the needs of Klal Yisrael, whether it was the Amor HaEsh, also talked about in this week's Parsha, or the Aron HaKavod, or the food, or the Bar Miriam that is discussed, right? All of the things that Klal Yisrael needs in the desert, all of the things that they had in the Midbar seem to be Nisim Gluyim, right? But this, for some reason, this armor, all of a sudden we need, right? So you want to say it's a little more difficult, the Kadosh Baruch Hu could do anything, yeah? And we see there's actually raya upon raya that actually when it comes to these things, sometimes even with the most miraculous ways, nisim happen. Even the Gemara Titus talks about it. The Gemara Titus in Chafaf Amar Aleph Amar Aleph said it's a very famous story about Nachash Nacham Ish Gamzu. Nachash Ish Gamzu, and it goes a whole story through the Agadah, talks about there amazing things that happened, and he always appreciated life, everything as it was. Anything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent him, he felt was the Tova. And the Gemara gives a couple of examples there, and one of the most famous ones there, it says that Nacham Ish Gamzu was allocated, he was the shliach to go to the Roman emperor at the time and to bring the taxation, some payments, and he took a bag of jewels to the emperor. And on his way to get there, he had to stay overnight in an inn, and the jewels were stolen. The innkeeper came, took the bag of jewels, says the Gemara, and he replaced it with a similar weight of sand. And Nacham Ish Gamzu doesn't realize that it's sand. He thinks it's still the jewels. He gets to the emperor and he takes the bag of jewels. He thinks that the jewels, and he puts them in front of the emperor. The emperor opens it and it's sand. And the emperor feels that he's being mocked and he wants to kill Nacham Ish Gamzu. And he says, yeah, Gamzu Latofa, this is also okay. Yeah. And sure enough, the Gemara continues that Eliyahu comes and provides a nace. And he comes to the emperor dressed as a Roman. And he says to the emperor, perhaps this sand, yeah, perhaps the sand is actually the miraculous, the nace-filled sand from Avram Avinu. The Pasuk says in Yeshaya, talking about Avram Avinu, it's in Perek Mem Aleph, beginning of the Perek, I believe it's Pasuk Beis or Gimel. The Pasuk says, Yiten ka'afer charbo kikash nidaf kashto, says that referring to Avram Avinu, he threw sand and it became spears and swords. Avram Avinu just threw dust and things happened from it. So Eliyahu HaNavi comes dressed as a Roman, he says to the emperor, perhaps this is, you know, Jewish sand. You know, we can do unbelievable things with sand, the Jews. And the king says, that's interesting, I have to really fight my enemies. And he takes the sand and he throws it turns into spears. The emperor is amazed by the nisim in front of him and he says, thank you, and he rewards Nacham Ish Gamzu. On his way home, the innkeeper sees that he's been rewarded enormously from the king, from the emperor, and he says, why? How did he get rewarded? And he gets word that it's the sand from his bag. So he says, wait a second, this is a, you know, it says the innkeeper dismantles his inn to get to all the dirt under his inn. He takes a truckload of dirt to the king. The emperor says, what is this? He says, it's the dirt from my inn that Nacham brought you last week. And he takes it and he throws it, nothing happens, and the innkeeper gets killed. Yeah. We can create nisim, and nothing's beyond his ability. So Bnei Yisrael, we're in the desert. Yeah, man falls from heaven. So why can man could fall from Shemayim? Why is it we'll take dust from the ground, throw it, and Amalek would have been destroyed the same way? What's if Avram Avinu could do it? Yeah, Kaviyachol, the Bnei Yisrael could do it in the Midbar as well. So Rav Moshe Feinstein deals with this question in the Sefer Kol Ram, and an interesting mahalach that he goes with that I want to share with you to be able to understand why it was necessary nonetheless. We know that Bar Kochva was punished. When he makes a tefillah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a very interesting tefillah. Bar Kochva asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu for a nace when he goes to fight the Romans. The Romans were ready to attack, he was ready to attack, and derech HaTeva, the Romans had no chance. Bar Kochva had easy access to destroy them, to wipe them out, and the battle would have been simply won. In all natural means, Bar Kochva had the advantage, and he could have destroyed the Romans easily. And yet, before he goes to battle, he says a tefillah. Yeah, and the tefillah sounds fairly reasonable. It says, Kadosh Baruch Hu, don't allow any nisim to happen on the Roman side. Let Teva take place. Yeah. Let Teva take place. We're stronger, we're better trained, we have an army. We'll deal with them. Allow Teva to do its job, so to speak. And he says to Kadosh Baruch Hu, please allow no nisim to happen to the Romans. And sure enough, Baruch Hu is punished enormously. Because I'll tell us that he's punished why. Because there is no nature in battle. Bar Kochva was missing the point that even nature doesn't exist when it comes to the military activities that he was engaged with. We have to realize that the whole world is b'derech neis, and Bar Kochva's mistake was making a tefillah that he should ask that no neis, the whole thing is derech neis. The whole world is run by HaKadosh Baruch Hu derech neis. And Rav Moshe continues, and he quotes the Yalkut Shmoni. The Yalkut Shmoni is in Shmuel Beis, Siman Kuf Nun Gimel. And Rav Moshe brings down, and Rav Moshe finds and talks about the Yalkut quotes the four kings, four different kings who had Tvilas Takarash Baruch Hu. And I just want to mention two of them, the highest level and the lowest level. The Yalkut Shmoni brings down two requests, two Tvilos made by kings, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu grants their Tvilos, but with a subtlety. David HaMelech asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu before he goes to battle that he should have Hatzlacha in the battle, and sure enough, the Yalkut says that he was answered in his Hatzlacha, the battle where he was successful. He says, we're going to go out, we're going to fight, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu shall us win, and sure enough, they win, his Tvilos are answered. But the Yalkut brings down the Chizkiyo, makes this what seems to be an even greater Tvilah. Chizkiyo says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm not even going to battle, everything is from you, yeah, I'm going to sleep. And while I'm sleeping, please make sure our enemies are beaten. And sure enough, HaKadosh Baruch Hu listens to him, and the battle happens even without Chizkiyo leaving his bed. And the Pashut Pshat of these two Maisim of Tfilos HaKadosh Baruch Hu is that Chizkiyo's Tfilos is a much greater level. And the Yalkut explains that it's actually the opposite. David HaMelech's Tfilos is an even greater level. Why? Because even with effort, even when we're engaged, David HaMelech and his army recognized that even though they were involved in the Milchama, even though they were there doing, that had nothing to do with them. It was all HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's at the moment that we realize that without HaKadosh Baruch Hu's help, we can do nothing. It's at that moment, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's help, we can do everything. And the Yalkut explains that David HaMelech's tefillah is an even greater tefillah. Because he went to the Milchama, he went out, and yet he realized that it wasn't him. And that's a beautiful interpretation of the Akkad that Rav Moshe brings down. And Rav Moshe explains, really this connects to the Milchama that the Bnei Yisrael eventually had with Amalek and why they needed the armor to go out. Bnei Yisrael were beaten down. There was a Holocaust. They were there in Mitzrayim, Sheep of Mitzrayim, really beat Guf, Neshama. The Klal Yisrael was in a very low place. We know Memtes Shari Tuma. They needed to reconstruct themselves. They needed to be built to rebuild themselves. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu was giving us the tools to do so. And when doing so, he shot for the highest heights. He wanted us to create the greatest Klal Yisrael possible. So he took us out with the armor, with the military needs to fight, so they can reach this level of recognizing even when we're engaged in this world, not only when we stand back and we watch things on the side, but even when we're engaged in the world, it's counterintuitive, but it's a beautiful subtlety. Recognizing, says Rav Moshe, that even when we fight Amalek with great armor, with swords and knives and arrows, it's still nothing to do with those swords and arrows. It's still HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So take the chamushim, take that military ammunition, go to battle, but recognize that it's not the ammunition that's doing its job. That's what Rav Moshe says, that we still need to know that even though we're doing it, it's nothing to do with us, it's Hashem, and that's real bitachon. Recognizing that the reliance on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even when you're at work, even when you're taking the medicine, whatever personal effects that we're engaged in this world, recognizing that it has nothing to do with us, it really comes to Ribono Shel Olam, and that's the ikar, avodah that we have to have, and that's the reason, says Rav Moshe, that it was necessary for them to take out to come out of Mitzrayim with the armor. To see Nisim, to see Hashem's hand in Nisim is an amazing thing. It's great. Yeah, even Paro, in last week's parsha, it takes him a couple of makos. But even it says, Etzba Elokim, when Nisim happened, even Paro is going to see that it's Yad Hashem. Yeah, it took him a while, but eventually he saw it. Right? Baruch Hashem, we're people, B'nai Aliyah. When we see a nace, we say, wow, we can say that's amazing. To see it in Teva is more subtle. That's not just good, that's great. To see a nace in Teva, recognizing it. In many places in the Chazal, throughout Chazal, it's brought down. To see Neis and Teva is an even higher level, but the really greatest level is that even when you're engaged with that Teva, not just standing back from it, but recognizing when you're involved with it, it's even harder, and that's the greatest level that a person can achieve. Moving on to the second aspect of Rashi. Rashi says, Davar Acher, Chamushim means 1 in 5. 1 in 5 of Klal Yisrael died, and, 1 in Klal Yisrael went out, that's who went out of Mitzrayim, and 4/5 actually died in the Shleshes Me'afela. Well, if you think about this for a couple of moments, and I have to admit I'm not a mathematician, but let's work this through together. This actually tells us something very scary and almost unnoticed, that it's a second pshat in Rashi and a remez of a word that we're not really even familiar with, that there was a Yom Venarat, a terrible loss to Klal Yisrael. Mm-hmm. How many Yidden went out of Mitzrayim? So we know the number 600,000 is the number that's brought down in the Torah many times. We know it's the number that we talk about, but what was that? That was 600,000 men between the ages 20 and 60. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how many went out of Mitzrayim? So the number, we don't have an exact number, but we can extrapolate fairly safely to know that there was 600,000 men So you can add another, 600,000 women, probably about the same, right? That's 1.2 million Jews already. Mm-hmm. Under 20, over 60, and you didn't live at that time. Eklaisor was living certainly over 100, and we know the multiple births, enormous amount of the rest. In fact, actually, if you really want to talk about it, there's probably more than the same amount of women, because many of the men were killed by power in Mitzrayim. Yeah, but let's say between this 1.2 million, under 20, over 60, the number often referred to is approximately 3 million. Yeah, approximately 3 million didn't went out of Mitzrayim. Mm-hmm. If that was one-fifth of Klai, so 4/5 died, mm-hmm. how many didn't die? I mean, the numbers are frightening. Mm-hmm. Yeah? 4 times 3 is 12 million didn't died during the Shoshu Semei Afela. Mm-hmm. A pachad. We're so careful about every single human being, even the loss of life of a Mitzri. At the Pesach Seder, we have a minhag to take a drop of wine out, Davit Tzvadeh, even though they were our enemies, even though Hakar Satov, we lived there, all kinds of inyanim that we talk about, but the loss of life, even for a Mitzri, we're sensitive to. 12 million Yidden died in Mitzrayim, we don't even mention it. It should be a tainus, it should be what a pachad. 12 million in Mitzrayim. Sheep in Mitzrayim, with Gullus, the Gula of Mitzrayim shouldn't be a simcha, it should be a fela. Yeah. We don't see it anywhere talked about. Rashi brings it down, but it actually gets worse, because Rashi is actually quoting a Mechilta. Yeah? And the Mechilta, if you look at it carefully, Mechilta brings down, I'll quote it for you, the Mechilta says, V'chamushim olu b'nei Yisrael, Mechilta says, Echad mechamisha, which is what Rashi quotes. Yeah? The Mechilta continues, and it says, V'yesh amrim, Echad mechamishim, 1 in 50. And then Mechilta continues, V'yesh amrim, are those who say, Echad mechamesh meos olu. 1 in 500 went out. So if you want to do those numbers, yeah, if it's 1 in 49, it's 147 million, right? 49 times 3 is 147 million, right? Yeah, it's a lot of people, yeah? 3 million Jews. Yeah?
3 times 49.
3 times 49. Yeah, it is 3 times 49. It's 147.
Yeah.
Yeah, 147, right? 1 in 500, yeah, 499 is the same thing, it's just a billion. It's 1.470 million. Yeah? 1 billion.
Times a million.
Yeah, it's 1,497,000,000. I mean, the numbers are asked. There probably weren't that many people alive in the world at the time, right? Certainly not in Mitzrayim. Yeah. So suddenly now it goes from being a huge loss to Klal Yisrael to being numbers that just don't make sense anymore. Yeah. So what's going on here? So a mahalach that I heard from Rav Shimon Schwab Zatzal, a beautiful idea that I want to share, which I think really tells us a lot about the way we see people, the way we see Yidden, the way we see the world, and our view, certainly in numbers, but more importantly about people. If you look at Pasuk in Bereishis, the Pesukim talk about Kain and Hevel, very famous Pasuk. The Pasuk tells us, Vayomer Hashem al Kain al Hevel, Vayomer Hashem al Kain, I am Alachicha, where is your brother? Vayomer Leadati, Hashem Aruchi, Anochi, am I my brother's keeper? Yeah, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Vayomer, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Ma'asisa, what have you done? Kol Demei Achecha, Sarakim Alayim Adama. The voice of your brother's blood is screaming to me from the ground. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Rashi brings down the Gemara, asks the question, the Pasuk's grammar is something's up. It says, Kol Demei Achecha. It says, the voice of your brother's bloods, plural, demeachacha. It shouldn't say damachacha, says the Gemara. The Gemara says, no, it says demeachacha, plural bloods, because Kadosh Baruch Hu was taking to task Kayin, not just for killing Hevel, but rather damo, his blood, v'dam zarosav, the blood of his offspring as well. Even though he only killed one person, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was taking him to task for killing all of the future. He killed 50% of the population. Yeah? He killed 50% of the population. So even though he killed just one person, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Kain, you didn't kill one person, you killed plural people. You killed the future of what will be from this person. We don't just see Hevel as one human being, we see him as the future of what's going to come from him as well. And we see this in many other places as well. We see in the Pasuk in Yeshaya, Hakatan Hi Ela Aleph, Atsir Lagar Atsum Ani Hashem. The Pasuk says that we see one, the small group of people being thousands, and the young being great and mighty. And there's many different mefarshim to explain this idea, but the idea that a small number of people can become an enormous future and the potential that comes from them. Yeah, we don't just look at the here and now; we see what's going to be in the future as well. We see by Noach, we see that Noach's toldos. A famous idea in Parshas Noach, and it told us Noach, Noach is tzaddik. Right, then the next pasuk is Vayelid Noach. Right, excuse me. The pasuk says that first pasuk, each tzaddik tamer mayabedarasa v'sarakim v'salach Noach, and then it talks about his children. Right, it says Vayelid Noach tor shabanim v'shemes chames yafes. Why does the pasuk go on a tangent? It says Ela told us Noach, and then it tells us that Noach the tzaddik. He's walking with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Right, they have a relationship. Yeah, and then all of a sudden it talks about his children. Yeah. So almost more than his actual blood children is the potential and the greatness that's coming from it. Yeah, the mitzvahs that come from it. Ela told us Noach, what is the real told us of Noach? The Noach was a tzaddik. Yeah, the Noach walked with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's the future of Noach. That's the potential that we see in him now, not just in the here and now, but in the future, what's to come as well. So says Rav Shimon Schwab, very beautiful idea. He says, Bechein. Yeshlomer Khan, the beautiful pshat in the Chiddush, I haven't seen anywhere else. V'chein Yeshlomer Khan, Rishab says that it seems that in our psukim and in Rashi's pshat of Achamushim and pshat in the Mechilta ultimately is v'chein Yeshlomer. There is to say Shem Emes Lo Meisiv El Yechidim. Seems that really only a few individuals actually perish during this time during the Tzias Mitzrayim. Shaul Ben Yisrael Kamer Rishayim Gemurim. There were only a couple of people who really didn't merit. Many of Klal Yisrael wasn't on a great darga, but because of Schusim that they had, the Lusham, the Sharnam, right? We know that Klal Yisrael wasn't doing great altogether, but there were only a few, says Rav Schwab, who weren't really zochet to go out at all. Shalayim Ruim Lagula, Vehem Mesim Shloshes Me'afel, and they died when? During the 3 days of darkness? Of Makas Choshech? Aval, Imayin Yisharim, says Rav Schwab. If they had lived, if when we look at them relative to the rest of Klal Yisrael, had they lived, yet? They would have given birth to many, many multitudes of children that would have come from them and were taking to task them on a certain level for opting out of Klal Yisrael. How many people opted out of Klal Yisrael? Not just the few Rishayim, but rather what was to come from them as well. We lost a great chelik of Klal Yisrael because of these few individuals. It continues with Schwab, and he says, actually an interesting idea, and he says, that how could it be that the Mechilta, if this is Pshat in the Mechilta, what's the Machlokas? What's the Eish Omrim? He says, up until what point do we count? He says it could be that we're counting from Yetzias Mitzrayim till the building of the Beis HaMikdash. It could be that we're counting up until the Churban Bayis, when the Golus that we know of today started. And it could be that we're counting to the Mos HaMashiach. So how far do we look? Are we counting 1 in 5, 1 in 50, 1 in 500? But we're not counting actual people. We're talking about potential. How far down the chain are we looking to see these people's engagement in Klal Yisrael to say, that chelik is lost? Yeah? And he says that at the time, Machlokas, it's not pshat of how many died. Everyone agrees that it's just a few, says Rav Schwab. But what actually is being argued here is how far we look into the future to the success, or to the continuation of these people. Now, says Rav Schwab, it's Mukhra from Rashi. Yeah, this is Pshat. Why? Because Rashi says specifically, when did they die? Yeah, during Choshech. During Makas Choshech. How does that help? Why does that help? Why is it Mukhruch that way? Because Rashi says, in order that the Mitzrayim wouldn't notice, so Yegishu HaMitzrayim, that the Bnei Yisrael died. Now, Mitzrayim, we know from Rav Dessler, it comes from the word Meitzar, they were constrained, they had a real stronghold on their slaves. They didn't let people just, no one escaped from Mitzrayim ever. They were incredibly intense, roll calls, etc., right? No one escaped. So you want to tell me, let's just take the low number, 12 million Jews died, yeah? More. It's four-fifths of Klal Yisrael, and they didn't notice them disappear, yeah? It's not mistaken. This doesn't make sense. Four-fifths of Klal Yisrael disappear, and it says that they would have time to bury them, you know? I mean, Nebuch, you know how long it takes to do a kfura on mass? Nebuch, lo aleinu, we should know from these things. Yeah? To bury 12 women so the Mitzvah shouldn't notice, that no one noticed that they were gone, right? It doesn't make sense. So Shrab says it must be pshat. There was only a few. And he actually says, very very poignant to his Kehillah, he was the Rav of Washington, in Washington Heights, of a Yekesha community, no bias, Shalaya, Shalmeis, Nebuch, the tragedies they went through and rebuilding their lives in America. Shrab says that it's possible to say that we talk about the Nazis, Yimach Shemam B'Zichro, he says, when they say, we say that they killed 6 million, to now, many years later, we could say they killed 50, 60, 70, 100 million Jews. Yeah, because what would have come from those? What would have come from those 6 million? And Klai Yisrael looks at each and every single Jew like that. And that's what he says, that's pshat in these two things. Why was it necessary for Klai Yisrael to get these two messages before they go out of Mitzrayim? So I think that the lessons really, why are these two messages here specifically poked as they're going out of Mitzrayim? Two very important messages, but why here? Because Klai Yisrael, we needed a rehabilitation process. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was taking Klai Yisrael out into the Midbar, right? Yeah, and they needed to be rebuilt. They were ready to receive the Torah in the Midbar, ready to go out to Eretz Yisrael. They needed to be strengthened in these two areas. The idea of Bitachon, to really understand that everything comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and also the power of the person, the power of the individual. There, you could, I mean, in psychological terms, it would be easy to understand. In modern day terms, that they were beaten down. They were depressed. Self-esteem probably was not very high amongst people who have been slaves for hundreds of years. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is building them and says, you matter. And this message of Achamushim teaches us that each and every single Jew truly matters. On a side point, I just want to say, somewhat side point, people often quote this pasuk in their work, Feish HaTorah, and people often refer to this pasuk as a little bit of a raya. What's the urgency of Kirov? Why are you so nervous? Klai Yisrael is going off the rails. There are people who... It was always that way, even in Mitzrayim. Chamushim was only a fifth. So two things I want to say, just to conclude. One, Rav Noach Weinberg, the Shashiva Veish HaTorah, that's all he used to always say. He used to say that you talk to any parent who has a number of children, whatever that number they're blessed with, 1, 5, 10, whatever the number that they're blessed with is, talk to a parent and say, you know what? Yeah, what happens if you only have atzlacha with 1/5 of them? 2/5 of them? 4/5 of them? The parent's not going to be happy. Yeah, no one wants to hear that they're not having atzlacha with all of their children. Klai Yisrael is a Kadosh Baruch Hu's children. Achenu B'nai Yisrael need to be part of the totality. We're not happy, we're not going to give up until we get to all of Klai Yisrael. That's our job as brothers and sisters. Kadosh Baruch Hu, Avinu Shabbat Shemayim, cares about every single individual. So if there have been instances where Klai Yisrael wasn't all together, Ritz Hashem will get there, and Mashiach will come. We'll get there once again. More than that. But I think that according to the way we're looking at it here, yeah, that in Mitzrayim it wasn't great numbers. Lefi, the Pshat of Shwab, it wasn't such great numbers. It was a small number, and even they matter. And when we look at them, look at the impact they can have. So when you reach out to a Yid, when you reach out and you touch somebody's neshama, you're not just reaching out to them, you're reaching out to Dorei Doros. You're reaching out to what they will become, what their grandchildren will become, what their great-grandchildren will become. Great Chalakim of Klal Yisrael, Rebbe Sasher. And I think it's very obvious when we talk about the power of the individual, both Midat Tov and Merubah for ourselves, when we know that when we're Mechanach ourselves, when we learn Torah, when we're Mechazak ourselves by coming late on a Thursday evening to hear a couple words of Torah, yeah. When we do that, it's not just ourselves. We're not just empowering our own actions, and it's going to make our Shabbos a little bit better. Maybe we have a nice Torah to say at the Shabbos table. Everything that we do for ourselves isn't just for ourselves, because we don't see ourselves as the here and now. We see ourselves for the future. We see ourselves for our children, if it's a Shabbos, for our grandchildren, for the future of Klal Yisrael. Thank you very much. with trepidation from my Tugentov's words.